All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are going to continue to focus a bit more broadly on these markets and focus more on the currency markets as I am chatting with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also writes the Mark to Market blog. Now, Mark, when it comes to the U.S. dollar, I really feel like under the radar, the dollar has been moving up all year. No one is paying that much attention to it. And fair enough. You know what? The dollar is still not at these like astronomical levels that we can say it was a year ago, well over 100 on the dollar index. But to start this year, the dollar right around 89, and now it's challenging that 93 level. You and I were chatting off mic, and the extent of these dollar moves against a wide range of currencies definitely needs to be noted. Can you break down some of the outperformance that we've seen in the dollar compared to other currencies, please?
Sure. So maybe the place to begin is just thinking about what's happened this past week. The dollar has made new highs for the year, first quarter, against the euro, the yen. So those are the two big currencies, Swiss franc, Swedish krona, the Aussie, Kiwi, but also made new highs for the year against the Chinese currency. So this is really the major currencies right here, leaving aside the Canadian dollar and the British pound. So I'd say that you're right. The dollar has it hasn't gotten a lot of fanfare, a lot of attention. Maybe that's been taken up by the equity markets, but the dollar has really it's really defied a lot of people's expectations. People like myself, I think, bearish the dollar coming into this year, and it had to adjust as the dollar has basically been trending higher since the 3rd or 4th of January.
Mark, where do you see the demand is coming from for the dollar? Because one thing that we've been hearing about recently, or really throughout this whole year, more focus has been on the bond market and yields continue to rise. So that means bonds continue to sell off. People are saying, oh, well, maybe this last little pullback in yields has been due to more of the foreign investors coming into the market, so then they need to buy dollars. But again, that's not looking at the whole picture of what's been happening this year. So where is the demand coming from for the dollar?
That's a good question. You know, it's one of the great things about the foreign exchange market, $6.6 trillion a day, daily, you know, average daily turnover. So we don't have a lot of transparency, but one place that does make it more transparent as far as participants is in the futures market. And as the year began, the speculators, sort of what the CFTC calls non-commercials, who don't have the underlying business need, were all short the U.S. dollar. And what we've been seeing in recent weeks, I'd say especially in the last 5 or 6 weeks, has been a big short covering. So that is, people were short the euro futures. They were long the futures. They've been liquidating those, in effect, then short the dollar. And I think that a good part of what we've been seeing is a short covering squeeze in the dollar. Now, we've reached, as I mentioned, we reached new highs for the year, but think about what happened before the year began. In November and December, the dollar sold off pretty hard. And we are just approaching those levels. For example, that would be 116 in the euro, translates to around 94.30 or so in the dollar index. I think the same thing can generally be true about many of the currencies, that even though they've weakened here, the dollar hasn't recouped everything it lost in November and December yet. And so I think those are the kind of levels that people are looking at.
So what are the levels that you're watching more closely in terms of maybe this run petering out or any strong resistance levels that you see simply on the dollar index?
Yeah, so on the dollar index, you know, I had this, I had thought that the dollar index had made a head and shoulders bottom by around the middle of January. And I thought that that projected up to about 92.75. Well, it's basically taken us 2 months to get there. And so, so sort of like now that we're there, what can we do? And I think that, you know, we pick these levels, not necessarily because they're the top, but because they're like reasonable to be achieved, like doable. And, you know, and so we stalled just in front of 93. We did get past that, my target. We got up a bit further yesterday, and that becomes the key level now, is about, we stopped just shy of 93. Now, I'm thinking we go back up to that 94, 94.30 area if we can get above 93. We're consolidating today ahead of the weekend. Not that big of a deal, and we're consolidating above the 200-day moving average. That comes in around 92.60. And this is the first time the dollar index has been above its 200-day moving average since last May. So here, I think we're, like, in the big picture, I think what's going on is this, I still want to see this as this uptick in the dollar index as largely corrective in nature. And, you know, we have to think about what does that mean? Well, think about what happened early last year when the pandemic first struck and how high the dollar index was. And that is to say, it was, I have it hitting about 102.99 on March 20th last year. And so if we're going to correct, so if the dollar sold off since then from that 102.99, we fell to 89.20 on January 6th. And so if we're going to correct, if that's the move that's behind us now, we're going to be correcting that. Where do we go? Well, the first retracement, that Fibonacci retracement, 38.2%, comes in there 94.50. So in a big, so if I'm right, this is corrective in nature, and the macro force behind this is divergence. The U.S. is on monetary policy, fiscal policy, the vaccine. The U.S. has been more aggressive than most of our trading partners, and more aggressive than most of the large high-income countries. And so so I think that this divergence lifts the dollar, but it's not forever. It's not like this divergence is going to persist much longer. And by much longer, here's what I'm thinking. So Europe's a little bit slow on rolling out the vaccine, but starting next month, I expect to see it accelerated. They get a lot more deliveries of the vaccine. So I'm thinking, I had thought that late Q1, early Q2 was going to be the peak in divergence, but maybe it doesn't come till later in the quarter. At the same time, beginning probably in the summer, in the fall, we're going to begin talking about the fiscal cliff in the U.S. as some of the fiscal stimulus, the checks would have run out, some of the unemployment extensions would be expiring, other programs will be expiring. And so I'm thinking that the second half of the year will be more of a convergence over divergence. And by that time, I think they will see the dollar index rise a bit more. But for me, the longer-term view is still negative for the dollar. And it's because that the price, how we're getting to get this extra growth this year is through deficits, budget deficit, large one. But more, not just that, budget deficit, because like who doesn't have a budget deficit? But the issue really is that by revving up the U.S. economy, the U.S. is going to be having, reporting larger, perhaps close to the record level, current account deficits. So I'm thinking in the second half of this year, so the dollar index has more room on the divergence momentum carrying it further, but that by the second half of the year we're going to begin talking about convergence, and we're going to begin talking about the twin deficit problem in the U.S. And so the longer the underlying bear market for the dollar can resume.
So longer term then, or even by the end of the year, mid this year maybe. You are still bearish on the dollar. We do need to understand big picture that volatility in the U.S. dollar, to see in under a year it moved from 103 down to 89 and now it's bouncing. Those are some historic moves when you take into account the dollar. So again, last year was a just wild ride. When it comes to this generally higher dollar from at least the beginning of this year impacting other markets, what do you think its impact currently has been on commodities?
Yeah, you know, this, in some ways, right, because most of these commodities are priced in dollars, you'd expect that a higher dollar dampens commodities. And maybe we're beginning to see some rolling over, some weakness, some of the industrial metals especially. Oil has been volatile. On the other hand, I wonder about the mechanics here. Of course, say iron ore that China buys from Australia, or soybeans that buys from Brazil, they'd be invoiced in dollars. But the underlying demand is from China, and I think that's partly the story of commodities lately. Is that it seems that the strength when the dollar was falling in November and December, and even into January, people were talking about the super cycle in commodities. And now that the dollar has gained a little bit better traction, people are questioning that a bit. But at the same time, I think the story is really about China. As commodity prices were rallying, it looked like China was not only importing it to build goods, but also importing to rebuild inventories. And it's become clearer that the Biden administration is not going to backtrack anytime soon on these sanctions against China and these tariffs. So if you were sitting in Beijing, you'd have to be worried about this. And so the building up of the inventories, but now it seems in the last couple of weeks at least, that the inventory cycle, that the Chinese appetite for these metals for inventory purposes has dampened a bit. And so for me, I hear you that the dollar, the connection between the dollar and commodity prices, it's sort of mechanical because the invoice in dollars. But at the same time, don't lose sight of the demand side coming from China, especially as the factory of the world.
Yeah, fair enough. China is a major player in commodities. We've seen that over the last at least few decades here. Any other markets that you think this rise in the dollar is impacting then?
Well, I think that in some ways, if you tell me the dollar is going up, you know, there's what do people want to do? It's interesting that, you know, for good fundamental reasons, the U.S. equity market typically outperforms Europe. We have faster growing, more profitable businesses, all kinds of good reasons. And the U.S. stock market so far this year, looking at, say, the S&P 500, is up about 5%. Most of the major European bourses are up more than that. And so I wonder if the strong dollar, what do people want to do? You buy European exporters who benefit. You buy the exporters because they benefit from a weaker euro, and as a way to move out of a highly overvalued or a very rich market like the U.S. and buying some of the underperformers in Europe. At the same time, you know, our indexes in the U.S. are so heavily weighted to technology. Europe's not. And so I think that also helps explain why the Chinese stock market is really the worst performing major market this year, because it's so heavily weighted towards technology. Europe is not so weighted towards technology. I would say in Europe's case, big difference, heavier weighting for banks and heavier weighting for oil. And so with both of those markets having been in doing well, say, it's not that surprising that like the DAX is up, the French stock market is almost up 8%. So we are seeing, I think, some rotation. And it's sort of like one of these recurring fancies that people get. And maybe this is another window of them. And that is that Europe can outperform the U.S. in the stock market.
That would be interesting. Now, let's wrap it up here quickly, Mark, with just a quick comment on what you're watching for next week. Next week is going to be a shortened trading week, thanks to Easter, but there are some big events that should be noted. Please share with us which ones you're watching.
So I think for a lot of people, next Wednesday, when President Biden is in Pittsburgh, he's going to choose that heartland of America to unveil his infrastructure program. It looks like about $3 trillion. I would imagine it would come in two parts. One is for the material infrastructure, the energy networks, highways, roads, bridges. And then there's going to be a human capital part of it. And that human capital part will be medical, and it'll also be education. And so after this $1.9 trillion fiscal stimulus package, everybody's known that the infrastructure bill's coming. It's taken shape over the last few weeks, and it'll be announced next Wednesday. And that will be followed 48 hours later or so by the U.S. jobs data. I know it's Good Friday. The Bureau of Labor Statistics doesn't care that much, and they're still going to release the jobs data. And it should be a very strong report. Remember, February was held back by some bad weather, and we're seeing much stronger weekly initial jobless, as much weaker, I should say, larger drawdowns, weekly initial jobless claims. So a lot of things pointing to a very strong non-farm payroll number, and by very strong, to have to put a number on it, upwards of 600,000, maybe 650,000 or so. So that's probably the single biggest release next week. The Eurozone reports CPI, but even if it's a bit firmer than expected, doesn't really matter because ECB President Lagarde says she's going to see through that. China reports their PMI, and you know this is kind of a typical seasonal story. Lunar New Year holiday in February depresses the numbers, and March it bounces back. So that might fit in a bit with the commodity story for you as well. And the other thing that happens next week is the Japanese report their Tankan survey. It's a bit like the PMI survey, giving you a sense of the manufacturing and non-manufacturing parts of the economy. The Japanese economy, the world's third largest, looks like it's contracting this quarter. Partly it's still the pandemic as the main headwind to it, but it's looking better. Some of our leading indicators looking better for Q2 for Japan. But next week, highlight for them is the Tankan survey.
Okay. Hey, Mark, great chatting with you. Thank you for wrapping up this weekend show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. And again, please go back through our website, kereport.com. Listen to all those daily editorials and all those company updates and introductions I recorded this week. I value all of your opinions. So please keep those emails coming to fleck@kereport.com. Let me know what you think of the companies and any other topics that you want me to discuss and focus on in the upcoming weeks. Mark, everyone else, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.